Welcome to Pillow Voices, a production of Jacob's Pillow Dance Festival with content from the Pillow Archives. I'm Norton Owen, the Pillow's Director of Preservation, and it's my pleasure to introduce Melanie George, one of our scholars in residence, who will be your host for this exploration of jazz as a communal practice.
I've learned that it's really not about you. I know a lot of people think when it comes to social dance, it's really sometimes presentational and, you know, look what I can do and stuff like that. But what I've learned personally is just, it's really not about you. The more you allow yourself to be free, you allow yourself, as we've all experienced, taking that mask off, being vulnerable, and just allowing yourself to be open, that might allow who you're social dancing with or who you're communicating with through your body to be free. So whatever you're willing to let go, whatever you're willing to be open with, that might allow them to have that freedom that they wouldn't have normally experienced without you being there. But it's just, again, about community and being free and just shedding everything you think you're not capable of.
That was a student from the school at Jacob's Pillow in 2015, reflecting on their experience in the summer program, Social Dances, Jazz to Hip Hop, co-directed by Camille Brown and Mansell Durden. We'll be hearing from more students, as well as Mansell and Camille, throughout this episode as we explore the communal aspects of jazz dance. What I love most about that student's reflection is that it is emblematic of the ways jazz functions beyond the stage. A simplistic interpretation of jazz is that it is strictly about fun and sex. While it can be about those things, it is because first and foremost, jazz dance is about humanity and agency. Fun and sex are only two aspects of a fully realized human existence. Jazz began as vernacular dancing, meaning it was created from the everyday experiences of regular people in relationship to each other. As a result, there is always room in jazz for individuals to put their personal stamp on the dance while simultaneously honoring the group dynamic. It is not one or the other. The relationship is fluid and reliant on both parts to function healthily. In many ways, jazz, the music and the dance, are a microcosm for democracy in America, where all voices are contributing towards furthering a common goal. This value is embedded in the history of the form and its critical connection to the African diaspora. Though jazz dance is synonymous with change, it is through the arc of those changes over many decades that we see the capacity of movement to teach us about the values of citizenship, community, and the full spectrum of human relationships. Mansell spoke about this at Jacob's Pillow in 2015.
For me, Jennifer Holman wrote this book called Apollo's Angels, which is about the history of ballet. And early in the chapter, she talks about, and it resonated with me, she talks about how we're not, and I use this sometimes when I'm speaking to classes, but how we're not just giving or imparting technical acuity, that the steps are not just steps, that they are related to a past that connects us to what our earlier generations and ancestors did, how they lived, how they thought, what movement meant to them. So it's really important to pass that on. And then when I first began teaching in universities around 2003, you know, they want me to come in and teach hip hop. So I'm thinking, okay, this is a private institution. I can't go in there with like, well, this is the movement we did on the playground back then. I had to really go deeper, as Camille said. So the information that I already had at that time, I did more digging so that they would begin to understand the relationship and how important this movement was. And the same thing, I found the same thing, that everyone knew who, you know, they knew who Bob Fosse was. They knew who Luigi was. They didn't know who Leroy Stretch Jones was. They didn't know Al Mins. They didn't know Norma Miller. They didn't know. So I felt that it was my duty. I was like, let me bring some footage in here, show you who these people are, what they did, what the relationships are, so that you are much more well-rounded in what this movement is, and in certain cases have a more diverse cultural context to what it is and what it meant, and then that leading into, you know, social political understanding and whatnot, mm-hmm. so that the movement, again, was not just movement. It's not just steps, and it's not arbitrary.
You may be wondering, what is all this talk about social dance? I thought this podcast was supposed to be about jazz. Well, jazz dance and social dance in America are closely linked. At one time, they were one and the same. The jazz dance tree has grown to encompass theatrical and classical styles. It has traveled around the world and now has homes in academia, conservatories, and is a bedrock of commercial dance. But the roots are vernacular, improvisatory, and egalitarian by way of the African-American experience. And it is through social dance that community is most visibly present and actualized in jazz. Camille Brown was asked to define social dance. This is what she said.
Social dance for me is things that happen within a community, whether they be political or just in terms of expressing yourself. And there's resistance. And there's a need for a response in the way of movement against whatever's happening politically. And sometimes it's a way of people to just be with each other and communicate and share their joy. But like Mansell said, I think it just depends on, you know, the community.
A core aspect of social dance that facilitates communal relationships is the use of improvisation by soloists and the ensemble. If democracy involves the free exchange of ideas and power derived from the people, then its artistic embodiment is improvisation. Improvisation provides an entry point for the performer and observer on their own terms, allowing for multiple responses. The dancer's role is elevated to active citizenship, from performer to composer. This notion reflects historian Carl Becker's view that democracy's, quote, fundamental assumption is the worth and dignity and creative capacity of the individual, so that the chief aim of the government is the maximum of individual self-direction, end quote. Through improvisation, the dancer is given an opportunity to engage, dialogue with, and personalize the dance, moving away from right and wrong towards what if and why not. Scholar-in-residence Suzanne Carboneau touches on this idea in her conversation with Mansell and Camille.
So maybe that brings us to the idea of improvisation. Can you talk about that?
Oh, improvisation.
Yeah.
I guess...
Because we think about social dances the way we know them as kind of set, but
right.
this is a different kind of tradition.
Well, I think improvisation is the freedom to live within a structure. So I know we're doing it with the students, giving them something set, but allowing them to have the freedom to do that. And what does it mean when you put on the context of being enslaved? What does it mean to find your freedom in the midst of being enslaved?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you negotiate that in your body?
Mm-hmm.
That's just to add to that. The way that I define dance, I use dance as an acronym, and it's discovering the autobiographical self, negotiating creativity and expression.
Can you say that again, please?
Discovering the autobiographical self, A, negotiating in creativity and expression, which, you know, leads into a whole other thing when you break down the words themselves. What are we discovering? The autobiographical self? Yes, we're unearthing things about ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and we're negotiating space, our body, our ownership, and then how we create and what in terms of production and what that is, with even with our own movement, not necessarily for presentation, and what that expression is, and then getting into a sense of emotion, because when you break the word emotion down. E is for energy, M-O means ephemeral, and shun is action. So it's short, like these dances are, they're in the body, but then as a manifestation, sometimes they're short-lived, because we know in that era, that dance was hot.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hot now, but we can still do it because it's in the body.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that motion that's created between that energy and the action that energy has.
So, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, and then I just wanted to put on the context of what I had said before, the rejection through agreement.
Yes.
When you put that and then that political aspect to it, it becomes a whole other thing. So then it no longer becomes about steps. And it comes really about communicating to that person or communicating to a higher being or just communicating to yourself.
It also seems to me to say something about the idea of the individual and community and the relationship between individual and community.
In terms of what do you mean?
Well, that all of this takes place within a community, and everybody is taking part in a ritual or a social experience, but communicating as a group. But there's also room for the individual to be expressive too, and to have, as you say, freedom.
In jazz dance, improvisation starts from a shared movement vocabulary. This is comparable to the way jazz musicians improvise within the blues. In music, the players know the key signature, the chord changes, and the time signature before embarking on an improvisational journey. Likewise, there is a bank of dance steps created by jazz dancers, b-boys and b-girls, house dancers, and every social dance form within the jazz dance family tree. These steps are shared in social environments, providing a starting point from which the dancer can depart. Mansell has an encyclopedic knowledge of the lineage of social dances from the African-American community. He's about to give us approximately 60 years of history of dance steps and the tradition of passing down movements among family and friends.
Oftentimes, I'll talk about the Soul Train line. And even when I was in Chicago, I was, Soul Train line. Of course, everyone in Chicago was like, Soul Train line started here. So I'm like, well, okay, yes, it did. But what is the influence? And the influence is actually the camel walk. So if we're doing, if, can I?
Please.
Okay, I'm keep it, you know, small space. So in the 1800s, camel walk has been going on for a long time, but in like 1880 or so, a lot of times you saw the camel walk, it was very rigid in a sense, which a little later on had a hook in it. Yeah, but the hook had already been there in African movement. So later, 1924, has a nice tempo to it, but in 1957, it got slower, which became known as the stroll. So, you know, Dick Clark gets a group from Canada, the Diamonds, and gets some writers here and writes this song called The Stroll, because there was no song called The Stroll. There was just the movement. And they did the movement to Chuck Willis's C.C. Rider, right? Don Cornelius reflects, when I was young.
Maybe not everybody knows who Don Cornelius
is. Okay, so Don Cornelius is the creator of the TV show Soul Train. What was it, 30 years, 35 years? 40? Yeah.
And,
so he's the creator of that. And it started in Chicago and then went to California. And to feature his dancers, because in the early stages, he couldn't get all the big name groups. So he featured his dancers. And a concept of featuring them was the Soul Train line. But again, he reached back to his childhood and said, I remember the dance we used to do. The stroll, it's linear. You have two groups on the side, and they're going back and forth, and then two couples meet in the middle, and they go down. Well, that was a camel walk. He renamed it the Soul Train line. So there's one through line. And then I'll give two more. Or if you want me to sit down, I'll sit down. So another step, the drop Charleston, yeah, is here, and you drop down. Well, it's not been confirmed, but I talked to a lot of the elders from the late 60s, 70s who were into a style of dance called rocking. And it's very heavily Latin influenced. And what breakers, or b-boys as we call them, do is they do a step called the Charlie Rock, where it's a one and step. So whether they saw that or not and took it, I can't say. But there's just this similarity in movement. So when you look at a lot of jazz movement, James Brown, for example, was heavily influenced by movements associated with the Applejack. And then he made it his thing, and he mixed that with the mashed potato, and then he comes up with the James Brown, which was also mixed in with the slop. And all three of those are heavily influenced by the Charleston. So there's James, who was born in 1933, the Applejack, which is popular in 1940, and he's doing
Can
that.
Can you show us the Applejack?
There's a couple of different ways that I learned, okay. Right? One we were doing today, which is this. Another way was on the heel. And then sometimes people doing it would kind of go up on one leg and walk and then go into a thing. James Brown took that walk, mm-hmm. as we know, and did it his whole career. But then you're looking at a mashed potato, which is coming from the Charleston. So if the Charleston is front and back, your mashed potato was to the side, which ends up creating the slop, which is a push back. And James mixing all of that together comes up with James Brown, but James was also influenced by tap dancers. Mm-hmm. So particularly people say Little Buck, and he would try to imitate that. So James works footwork. That's because he's trying to tap, but he's not a tapper. So he uses that, and he uses the splits that the tappers are doing and, you know, the flash acts are doing. So all that gets blended in, and who is hip-hop's biggest influence? Or let's say one of. Let's say one of. Mm-hmm. James Brown. Mm-hmm. So again, when we think about James as a child, seeing what, to put a name on it, let's just say the Savoy era, the 40s, James being influenced by the jazz scene of what's happening. James growing up, and it wasn't just James, Jackie Wilson, on and on and on, but James growing up and my parents being influenced by James, doing what he does. Let's think about Charlie Atkins, who taught Motown groups, and he's teaching them all the stuff from 20s, 30s, 40s. So now all this is getting passed, this information is being passed down because they're imitating the favorite groups they like who are doing steps that's coming from back then. Mm-hmm. The hip-hop crowd is imitating James, so there's a connection. And it's just going on. And then not to forget our parents, mm-hmm. our family who are doing dances, and we're young, we pick it up and we go on. So there's a lot of ways, I'm sorry for talking so long, there's a lot of ways where it's getting connected and passed on.
Mm-hmm. Just piggyback on the camel walk in the 80s for me, when I see it, is Janet Jackson's Pleasure Principle. Mm. And then even further, Single Ladies here, mm-hmm. with Beyonce. And then in terms of the Charleston, in the 90s, they had the thing called the Kid and Play. And then you hook and then you're around and around and around. So, you know, it just keeps going on and on and on and on. And I think that's one of the reasons why I question, well, what is the definition of originality?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Connections and community by way of lineage. You hear it in their words so clearly. It is what the student at the start of the episode referred to, and what I've experienced so many times in my own jazz practice. These are not isolated events. We have been replicating them for as long as jazz dance has existed. Longer, actually, because it originates in West African traditions. In jazz, we see the opportunity to bridge and bond with others.
Social dance is about the community. It's about connecting and communicating with one another. And sometimes that's not always stressed in a technical sense. So this was much more about spirit and heart than it was about details of perfection.
When I got here, I had a slight feeling about social dance, how it's kind of important. It keep on reoccurring in my life, but right now, social dance has taught, like, it. What I've learned throughout this two past weeks is that it goes way back to the motherland, and it's all connected, and it's keeping us, me, as a male, as a black male, alive, like keeping me connected, keeping me strong. So I believe that is so important for society, for culture, to have social dance, because that's where change happens, in the street to the office, you know?
That's it for this episode of Pillow Voices. Thank you for joining us today.
On behalf of Jacob Spillo, we look forward to sharing more dance with you through the films, essays, and podcasts at danceinteractive.jacobspillo.org. And of course, through live experiences during our festival and throughout the year. Special thanks to the National Endowment for the Arts for helping launch this podcast series. Please subscribe to Pillow Voices wherever you get your podcasts and visit us again soon, either online or on site.